A historically significant crew rotation mission docks with the ISS today. The Port Columbus Airport in Ohio gets $90 million from the FAA. And did you really think a new U.S. president could end earmarks? This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, December 22, 2009. NASA astronaut T.J. Kramer, Russian cosmonaut Oleg Kotov, and Japanese astronaut Soichi Noguchi are in Earth orbit aboard a Soyuz TMA-17. They launched from the Baikonur Cosmodrome Sunday afternoon, U.S. time, and are expected to dock with the International Space Station today. Get used to hearing similar stories for at least the next 5 years. The NASA space shuttle fleet has made its last crew rotation flight and will retire next year, so it's up to the Soyuz craft now. The shuttle will still see service as a flying truck to the ISS. In February, mission STS-130 will see the shuttle Endeavour deliver the new Tranquility node, one of the last major portions of the station to be installed. In an obvious transition from the manned to the unmanned era, that same month we'll see an unmanned Progress cargo pod deliver supplies to the station and haul away the trash. The FAA has awarded $90 million to Port Columbus Airport in Ohio to build a new south runway, converting the existing 10 right, 28 left into a parallel taxiway and creating enough space between the north and south runways to allow simultaneous operations. WCMH-TV in Columbus reports that the estimated cost for the new runway, which will be built 702 feet south of the existing one, is about $160 million. There will also be modifications to the airport golf course, installation of new navigation equipment, and demolition of some airport structures. The FAA has committed about $90 million to the project, with the balance being paid from passenger facility charges. The design process is still underway, so a groundbreaking isn't expected till sometime in 2011, with a ribbon cutting in 2013. Parts of the runway being replaced date back to 1928. The project is part of a larger revitalization plan that will eventually include a new passenger terminal. But airport officials say the current terminal, built in 1958, still has the capacity to accommodate as many as 4 million additional passengers per year. U.S. President Barack Obama rode into office on promises including one to fight legislative earmarks. While political veterans smirked, the fiscal year 2010 Department of Defense Appropriations Act does contain less than $9 billion in earmarks for the first time since 2002, according to Citizens Against Government Waste. Among the earmarks in the bill still raising CAGW's ire is a $2.5 billion line added anonymously for the purchase of 10 more C-17s. The Pentagon and the Obama administration say the additional planes are not needed, but continued production has been championed by lawmakers whose districts might see a loss of jobs if production ends. The group also calls out another anonymous earmark, $465 million for the F-136, an engine being developed by GE and Rolls-Royce as an alternative engine for the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. Quote, top military officials, former President Bush, President Obama, the Office of Management and Budget, and independent analysts all agree that the alternate engine should be eliminated. The project is expensive, unnecessary, and only survives because of pork barrel politics, unquote. Citizens Against Government Waste has released its 2009 Pig Book and says it's uncovered $19.6 billion in pork. You can find out more at CAGW.org. Up next on ANN, DOT issues what may be just more lip service on tarmac strandings. Airports Council International North America claims the new DOT rule is a victory for consumers. And the Air Transport Association says airlines will comply with it, but consumers may be sorry. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 22nd. I'm Paul Platt. There's good news and bad news on airliner tarmac strandings. The good news is the U.S. Department of Transportation yesterday announced a new 3-hour hard limit before airlines are required to allow passengers off a plane and into the terminal. The bad news, the rule won't take effect until sometime in April of next year, and seems designed more to appease squeaky wheels among consumer advocates than bring any real change in SOP. It will not apply in cases in which releasing passengers would negatively affect safety or security or disrupt airport operations. In other words, the rule protects those three excuses already used by airlines to point fingers elsewhere in strandings to date. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood said in the announcement, quote, "Airline passengers have rights, and these new rules will require airlines to live up to their obligation to treat their customers fairly," unquote. But LaHood's credibility is a little suspect these days. The secretary indignantly announced last month that fines against Continental, ExpressJet, and Mesaba for violating their customer service terms in a notorious tarmac stranding in Rochester, Minnesota, would, quote, "strengthen protections for airline passengers subjected to long tarmac delays," unquote. But it did just the opposite. Because the fines were based not on the stranding itself, but on unfair and deceptive advertised terms, most airlines just nodded and winked and removed any expectation of reasonable treatment in strandings from their advertised terms. FlyersRights.org has accused the DOT of lacking the political stones required to bring any real relief to passengers in strandings, and for the agency's fear of awakening a U.S. Senate in which the airlines appear to have developed deep relationships. We'll probably have to wait till Easter or maybe till the 2010 thunderstorm season to find out if this new rule has any impact at all. And there are more pairs of good and bad news in the new rule. Airlines would be required to maintain working toilets and provide drinking water in strandings, but that requirement doesn't kick in until you've been on the ground 2 hours, so your flight might still smell really bad for a while. The airlines are also required to adopt customer service plans, perhaps a nod to last month's disappearance of those terms from airline websites, but auditing of compliance will be left to the airlines themselves. Airports Council International North America, a lobby group that speaks for its member airports on issues including strandings, issued a press release yesterday supporting DOT's focusing of blames for strandings on the airlines and suggesting that the new DOT rule will be of value. ACINA President Greg Principato apparently overlooked the new rule's A380-sized loopholes when he commented, quote, "Airports have long advocated that airline passengers have the right to deplane after an extended amount of delay on a runway," unquote. The association points to its participation in last year's DOT Industry Task Force as evidence of its support for consumers. That task force produced a document which called for largely voluntary measures by the airlines, airports, and the FAA to mitigate strandings. For its part, the Air Transport Association, which represents most major U.S. airlines, appears to be supporting the DOT spin that this is a real rule with real teeth. ATA President James May says consumers will not be happy with the result. Quote, "We will comply with the new rule, even though we believe it will lead to unintended consequences, more canceled flights, and greater passenger inconvenience. In particular, the requirement of having planes return to the gates within a 3-hour window or face significant fines is inconsistent with our goal of completing as many flights as possible. Lengthy tarmac delays benefit no one," unquote. Still ahead, two injured flight attendants will sue the FAA and a weather services provider. K-State's Kurt Barnhart is the UAA's next president, and Able Flight awards a Bombardier scholarship to one of the good guys. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, December 22nd. I'm Paul Platt. Two flight attendants are preparing to sue the FAA and Weather Service International for shortcomings they say led to their injuries and turbulence on approach to California's Ontario International Airport on Christmas morning 2007. Donna Dacko and Inga Isaacson were walking the aisle conducting their final compliance check before landing when they were thrown from their feet by what the NTSB concluded was terrain-induced turbulence. Isaacson suffered a head injury with loss of consciousness and a concussion. Dacko suffered multiple fractures to her ankle. No other crew members or passengers were injured. According to their attorney, Elisa Brodkiewicz, both claims have been filed in anticipation of a lawsuit in order to beat a statute of limitations deadline this Friday. The claim against WSI accuses the vendor of negligence in failing to accurately report the weather to the airline. The claim against the FAA alleges its controllers advised other aircraft of SIGMETs for turbulence, but not Alaska Airlines Flight 464, the flight at issue. The Seattle Times quotes lawyer and former Alaska Airlines pilot John Nance as calling the premise of the coming lawsuit, quote, a steep mountain to climb, unquote. While the NTSB probable cause report will not be admissible in a civil suit, at least its findings support the plaintiffs for once. The board found the primary cause of the accident was, quote, the lack of turbulence forecasts available to the flight crew, which resulted in the flight attendants not being seated when the flight encountered severe terrain-induced turbulence, unquote. Kurt Barnhart, professor and head of Kansas State University's Department of Aviation, is the new president-elect of the University Aviation Association. He'll serve a one-year term. The UAA represents more than 525 members, consisting of educators, students, high schools, two- and four-year collegiate institutions offering aviation degree programs, and organizations and industry representatives that support collegiate aviation. The organization also serves as an advocate for collegiate aviation education to government, industry organizations, and the general public. Barnhart has a broad aviation and education background. He's worked to establish the K-State at Salina Applied Aviation Research Center, which he now directs. The center has attracted almost $650,000 in grants to date, including a $380,000 grant from the U.S. Air Force focused on mission planning for unmanned aerial vehicles. And finally today, Deputy Sheriff Dan Hodes was off duty and on his way to work on April 5, 1998. He spotted a stranded motorist on I-95 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He could have passed her by, but chose to pull his cruiser over to help. Moments later, another car hit and pinned him between the two vehicles, instantly costing him both legs. Through the months of therapy and adjustment to his new prosthetic legs, Dan never lost his spirit and has fought to live a normal life. Now his sacrifice and perseverance are being honored with a chance to realize his long-held ambition of becoming a pilot. Dan Hodes is the first person to be awarded the Bombardier Able Flight Scholarship. Able Flight uses specially adapted light sport aircraft to enable its students to earn their sport pilot certificates. Since 2006, it has awarded 26 scholarships. Charles Stites, executive director of Able Flight, commented, quote, we are pleased to work with Bombardier to create this opportunity for Dan, as it recognizes his determination to continue to rebuild his life and to inspire others by doing so. And it honors the generous support and community service of Bombardier, unquote. In the 5 years since light sport aircraft and the sport pilot certificate were created by the FAA, there have been many criticisms of the execution of the program. And you know, right this second, I can't seem to remember even one of them. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. We have only 3 editions of the special feature left for this year, and I'm going to spend them with ANN CEO and Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell, recalling some of the landmark stories which have marked the first 10 years of Aero News Network, a milestone we reached last month. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.